WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And man, oh man, do we have a doozy of a show for each and every one of you out there listening right now. On the show, in a matter of minutes, we will invite a former Michigan State football player who has really done some unbelievable things in his career while here at MSU and beyond. He's an offensive line coach now for Coach Up. He's also a cancer survivor. He made it to the Miami Dolphins rookie training camp this past summer. Just an unbelievable story, an unbelievable young man by the name of Arthur Ray. He will join me on the show to talk about his journey in the game of football. After we chat with Arthur, I will invite a sporting legend, a sporting icon, especially in the world of announcing, the world of the media and broadcasting. His name is Michael Buffer. He is a famed ring announcer in the world of professional wrestling and boxing. Michael will talk about his really remarkable career and so much more. You don't want to miss that. We will also bring you takeaways from this morning's Michigan State Cotton Bowl press conference that was held at Spartan Stadium. I'm still wiping the crust out my eyes as that press conference was held at 7 a.m. Can you believe that? All of that and so much more. If you want to call in and be a part of the show, call 517-355-9527. But you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Wednesday, December 16th. All right, folks, we are now, of course, into week two of high school boys basketball action. Of course, when it comes to the girls high school basketball action, I believe they're in week three now we're talking. But just to give a few of the notable scores from last night that we have listed right now, Dansville, they topped Potterville in boys basketball 60-46. Let's see here. Langsburg, they fell to Fowler 49-47. Bath, they topped Pawamo Westphalia 43-34. Fulton, they beat St. Patrick 68-52. Mason, they topped Lansing Eastern 42-35. And East Lansing, yeah, they keep on keeping on. 79-70 win over Haslett. In girls high school basketball action, Morris, they topped Bentley 54-13. Carson City Crystal, they beat Lansing Christian 42-5. Hamity, they beat Weberville 67-25. And St. John's topped Holt 65-36. Moving along now, future point guard for the Michigan men's basketball team, Xavier Simpson of Lima Senior High School out in Ohio. He exploded for 59 points last night in his team's 103-57 win against Fremont Ross. Setting the school record, Simpson made 23 shots, 8 three-pointers, and outscored Ross by himself. Again, he had 59. Ross put up 57 total points. The four-star recruit is one of four players in U of M's 2016 class, which signed last month. Caris LeVert recorded his first career triple-double to help lead the University of Michigan men's basketball team to a 77-62 win over the Northern Kentucky Norse on Tuesday night inside of Chrysler Center. LeVert made his presence known all evening long, notching 10 assists and 10 rebounds to go along with his 13 points. Michigan's offense found an early rhythm fueled by 18 first-half points from junior and sophomore guard Duncan Robinson. Wisconsin coach Bo Ryan is retiring effective immediately. He said that Tuesday after the team's win over Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Longtime assistant Greg Gard is taking over as interim head coach. Ryan coached Wisconsin to a school record 36 wins last season and a loss in the national championship game against Duke. Wisconsin is 7-5 this year. One more loss than the Badgers had all last season. Ryan, who turned 68 on Sunday, he said in a statement in June that he would coach this season and then step down. After coming off a heartbreaking loss to the Los Angeles Clippers on Monday, the Detroit Pistons try to get back on the winning track when they host the Boston Celtics tonight at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Andre Drummond averages an NBA best 16.3 rebounds and ranks third among all centers with a career best 17.7 scoring average. He had 20 points and 15 boards in Monday's 105-103 OT loss to the Clips that ended a two-game winning streak for the men in the Royal Blue. Kings star DeMarcus Cousins' manager was actually ejected for slapping at Rockets guard Jason Terry on Tuesday night during Sacramento's 107-97 win over Houston. Trailing the play on a dunk by Sacramento's Ben McLemore, Terry put his hand out to slow down as he neared fans sitting along the baseline. New England Patriots running back LeGarrette Blount will miss the remainder of the season because of a left hip injury. According to ESPN's NFL insider Adam Schefter and multiple reports, Blount suffered the injury in Sunday's game against the Houston Texans, becoming New England's latest prominent player to go down with a season-ending injury. Of course, Blount, if you remember, had a stint with the Pittsburgh Steelers before becoming a player with the Patriots. And isn't it ironic that Le'Veon Bell and Blount, two running backs for the Steelers, are now done for the year? Crazy stuff. And last but not least, Pete Rose said Tuesday he is a changed person, even if he still likes to bet on an occasional baseball game. And while Commissioner Rob Manfred rejected his bid to get back in the sport, partly because Rose still bets legally in Las Vegas, the all-time hits leader says he still has a lot to offer. Quote, "All I look forward to being someday is a friend of baseball. I want baseball and Pete Rose to be friends." Isn't that sweet? All right, well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKR. Here we go.
I wanted you for life, you and me, in the wind. I never thought there'd come a time that our story would end.
We talked about different ways of doing this, and time-wise, I know how things get out and how people talk, so if anything, if we had planned something, you know that it would have happened that way. So this way, we finish out the last game of the semester. It is so emotional right now, and I'm trying to hold this together. And I'll tell you, I still got some people that I have to talk to from the staff that I couldn't get to because I didn't want to say anything before the game. So please understand that this is going to take a little time. And I just ask you to understand that. Because when you've been doing something for 40-some years, it's... But I knew it would come. It's just we can't always do it the way we like.
It's not easy to say goodbye.
Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And of course, we had to start today's show by giving a salute to Bo Ryan. Again, if you guys haven't heard, Wisconsin coach Bo Ryan is retiring effective immediately. He announced that yesterday after the team's win over Texas A&M Corpus Christi. And we knew it was coming because Bo, he made the announcement that this would be his final year as the Wisconsin head men's basketball coach. And it was such a, it was very uneasy. Anytime that you see a longtime figure in the world of sports approach that podium and have to give a speech as to their decision to retire and walk away from the game and profession that they love. And it was tough watching Bo up there because, you know, again, we thought that he was going to play out this year and then announce his retirement, but it came so sudden, just out of nowhere. I thought he would play out the year and then retire. But he went on to say, quote, "This was a decision months in the making. I brought this up to Barry back in April. He advised me to take some time to think it over, and I appreciated that. But in recent weeks, I have come to the conclusion that now is the right time for me to retire and for Greg Gard to have the opportunity to coach the team for the remainder of the season." Goodbye. Yeah, it's always tough to say goodbye, folks. And, you know, Ryan went on to say, when elaborating on his decision as to retire now, he said that part of the reason he came back for this season was to give Gard time to be with his father, Glenn, who was sadly diagnosed with cancer in the spring and died this fall. Ryan said the demands on Gard's time to fly around the country, meeting with doctors and helping his dad, put his retirement on the back burner. Following Glenn Gard's death, Ryan then spoke with Alvarez and decided the semester break would be a good time to step down. But, Bo, we're going to miss you. I got the chance to chat with him only in the form of press conferences. Of course, anytime they would visit Spartan Stadium and play Tom Izzo's men's basketball team. But he's a man who carried himself the right way. We all know about his famed team last year that made it all the way to the national championship game, where, of course, they fell to Duke. But Bo Ryan consistently excelled in the Big Ten. His NCAA tournament resume is really the barometer of his longevity and success, folks. He retires with the fourth longest active tourney streak and in the company of the sport's elite coaching names. Of course, Coach K, his streak sits at 20. Tom Izzo at 18. Mark Few at 16. And Bo Ryan at 14. He will certainly be missed. All right, folks. Well, let's move on now. We have a double doozy of guests here on today's Current Sports, and we want to start off with a man who has really become an inspiration to many. Arthur Ray has had quite the journey. He's a Chicago native who stands at 6'3", 300 pounds. He's a former MSU lineman who played two seasons at Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado, after being granted two extra seasons of eligibility by the NCAA in January of 2013. He last played for MSU back in 2011. Earlier this year, he agreed to terms with the Miami Dolphins to join the team's rookie minicamp. Ray was once ranked as one of the nation's top offensive guards as part of Mark D'Antonio's first four recruiting class at MSU in 2007, but then life had plans of its own. He was diagnosed with cancer in his right tibia during his senior year at Mount Carmel High in Chicago. He beat cancer and has become an example of triumph and resiliency for anyone who hears his story. One of the fondest memories for Ray was when he started for the first time ever for Michigan State at the beginning of the 2011 season as MSU hosted Youngstown State. Here's a snippet from the Big Ten Network profiling that very moment.
That night, those eyes saw something that they had never seen. Spartan Stadium as a starter. And during the national anthem, those eyes revealed what it all meant.
I just thought of everything. I looked at the crowd. I'm finally here. I'm finally here. When I put my hand in the dirt, I looked at the guy across from me. And I was like, yeah, this is where I belong. That first game, a lot of people didn't think I'd make it. Everybody's quiet now.
Yeah, what a moment. Of course, Joel Foreman and Kirk Cousins, captains of the team during that time, they, of course, corralled and made that decision that it was only right for Arthur Ray to be the starter, to be a starter during that game. It is my pleasure to welcome Arthur Ray for the first time to WKAR's Current Sports. Arthur, how you doing, my man?
Hey, I'm good, man. How you doing?
I am doing fantastic. Arthur, this has been in the works for quite some time, and we finally got you on. You are a busy man, I tell you.
Hey, right. I'm trying to get busy as you, man. I'm happy to be on the show.
Without a doubt. Now, Arthur, I want to first start our chat by bringing up that moment. Of course, your first start with Michigan State. We just played a snippet that was well done by the Big Ten Network, profiling the very first game of the 2011 season when Joe Foreman and, of course, Kirk Cousins decided to make, you know, to talk with Coach D and make you a starter for that game. What, you know, when looking back at that moment, again, it wasn't too long ago. I mean, 4 years ago. What are some of your best memories from that moment, getting that first start against Youngstown State?
It was the end of one journey and the beginning of a new one. You know, everything from me being injured, being diagnosed 2007, and going through everything that comes with having cancer and, you know, the chemotherapy and the surgeries and years of grinding, trying to just be able to walk again, let alone trying to play big time college football. You know, it was the end of that journey. It was me finally saying, okay, I'm back healthy. I've been blessed. You know, God's granted me the opportunity to play this great game I love again, and I was just ready to take another step forward. But the things that I remember the most, I was in the hotel, and Joe Foreman was my roommate, and nobody mentioned anything of it. So I had no idea that I'd be get that news at team dinner before the game. And after Coach D told me, I was shocked and excited, man. It was still one of the great moments for me and something I definitely always remember.
Yeah, I actually got a chance not too long ago to check out the video of when you guys had that team dinner and Mark D'Antonio told you to stand up and he announced that you would be the starter and just the entire team erupted. Just unbelievable stuff. Now, Arthur, I want you, for those that may not know about your journey to end up where you are right now, this point in life, I want you to talk about your battle with cancer. Can you sort of take us in the moment when you were first diagnosed, when the doctors told you that you were diagnosed with this heinous disease, and what was your reaction to that news?
Well, my high school career was everything I wanted. So, you know, I pretty much accomplished all the goals I had set for myself. You know, was highly recruited and, you know, had all the accolades and everything. Just real excited for the next step, real excited to join the Spartan family and begin my college career. So I was on a high. When I describe it to people, I say I was on top of the mountain. And then I sort of, once I walked into this meeting with this doctor, because I had no idea that the lump on my shin was a bone tumor. I just thought it was just a little nick, another little bump from the season. And he sort of knocked me off my square a little bit, knocked me off. I was just totally devastated just to hear the news that I had cancer and that I'd have to go through everything that comes with that.
What was the toughest part of that battle for you?
The toughest part about it had to be chemotherapy. Just, you know, I was a 17-year-old athlete. You know, I'm so used to being strong and big and relying on my body and sitting there being on bed rest. And, you know, I crawled to my room my first day home. From my living room, I crawled to my bedroom because my arms were shaking. I couldn't really have the strength to walk on crutches yet. And, you know, it was just a humbling experience. Really, really shook me up during that time because, I was so young. I sort of didn't know how to take it, didn't know what was going on, really.
You know, many of us can only imagine what, again, that battle, you know, fighting cancer is like, Arthur. For those that don't, like myself, going through those chemotherapy treatments, I mean, what is that feeling like physically? I mean, how wearisome was that on your body, and what did you feel during that moment?
Well, physically, it takes a major toll. Obviously, you know, what everybody knows, you lose your hair and you lose weight. Me personally, I had the chemotherapy that I was given gave me mouth sores, so I had literally sores on my tongue, and I couldn't eat for like 2 days. I remember that being in the hospital. It just wears on you, you know, because I they normally, when they give you chemo, they give you a port in your heart, which is a, you know, IV that lets it flow, lets the chemo flow throughout your body. And yeah, man, it was real changing for me, like, because then I was on my, not being able to use my leg and being on crutches for so long. But the chemo definitely, it wears on you. You're just tired for no reason. You don't really want to eat. And me personally, I hate hospital food. I think it's terrible.
Right.
So I never touched it anyway. So, you know, it's just trying to keep my strength was a big battle.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, for me personally, Arthur, of course, I've documented numerous times on the show how I watched my grandfather go through that battle. He was diagnosed with prostate cancer and sadly passed away in December of 2011. At any point for you, Arthur, did it cross your brain at all about giving up? Did the words giving up ever cross your mind?
See, I think I was so young and maybe, you know, so people call it resilient now, maybe then they call it naive, but I had my eyes on the prize. You know, I had such a vision, such a drive to still want to accomplish everything in my life that I just mentally wouldn't allow it to beat me. You know, physically, of course, I had my days where I was like, man, you know, how much more can I deal with this? But, you know, mentally, I always looked ahead, always visualized myself being healthy. Like, it's funny, I look at myself now and, you know, I walk past people and everybody, you know, no one knows. You know, I'm walking down the streets of Chicago and just living life. Nobody knows, but don't even have a clue. The journey that I've been through. And this is exactly how I envisioned it. You know, I envisioned myself being back healthy. I envisioned myself, you know, being strong, being able to walk again on my own power, being able to live life how I wanted to. So, I think I was stubborn, man. You know, I had my dreams. I was bald head and couldn't walk. And I'm in the room watching Michigan State play Wisconsin. And I'm like, yeah, that'll be me in a couple of years. You know, so... I just always kept my eyes on the prize, you know, regardless of what other people say. You'd be amazed at all the negativity that gets thrown your way, you know, especially when you're dealing with a difficult time. That's why I tell people, when I talk to people now, I tell people to guard their minds, you know, guard their own ambitions, you know, just different things like that, because, you know, a lot of people, they like to sway you or hit you with the, you know, you need to wake up and face reality. And in all reality, I wasn't supposed to walk back on that football field.
Well, it's with that attitude. Yeah.
Right. Every doctor that worked with me, you know, they said, no, we don't think you're going to be able to play again. You know, you're too big. You know, you're 300 pounds, and we've never worked on anybody's leg who's been that big. And so much negativity, man. You know, it was funny to me, because it was actually the total opposite of what I was getting when I was healthy. You know, when I was healthy and everything was going well, everybody was praising me, and, you know, you'll be playing at Michigan State, all Big Ten, you'd be in the NFL, then it just was the total opposite. So I had to grow up a lot. You know, I think that's why, you know, I am as mature as I am now. But yeah, man, just gotta hold on to that vision.
Arthur, what was the experience like here at Michigan State, sitting on those sidelines and watching your other teammates flourish? That had to be motivating as well.
Yeah, motivating and tough, man. Tough mentally, you know, because you, like I said, I've been real big on visualization since I was younger. I always visualized myself, you know, playing against Michigan and playing against Notre Dame and different games like that. And to watch it but not really be able to participate fully, it was a tremendous motivation for me. You know, I tell everybody, you know, during that year of 2009 to 2011 before coming back, and that's really when I became a man. You know, I used my anger in the weight room and on the field and with everything. I built my body back up, started to build my mind up. And with Michigan State, it's always be a special place in my heart. My time there was real special, not just as an athlete, but as a student.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here to WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Arthur Ray, former Michigan State University football player. Now, Arthur, what was your time like at Fort Lewis College out in Colorado? What was your career like there, my man?
It was fun. It was fun, man. I walked on campus at Fort Lewis, and I'm in Durango, Colorado. You know, I just left East Lansing, Michigan, college town. You know, rowdy. Rowdy, you know, we have fun, everything.
Always turned up, right?
right, always. And I get to Durango, Colorado, in the middle of the mountains, and the people there don't even know the school has a football team. so it was totally different, but it was good. It was exactly where I wanted. It was somewhere where no one really knew me and knew what I've been through, so I knew I wouldn't be judged on my past. I knew I'd be judged on the work that I proved. And that's what I wanted. You know, I sort of wanted to step away from maybe my own shadow a little bit. I wanted to prove myself on the field again only, and let people dictate how they thought about me as a player. And then, of course, I obviously always wanted to represent myself as a person to the highest extent. But Durango was fun, man. John L. Smith came down there. That was funny because my junior year before he was let go at that MSU, he recruited me. And to see him, he gave me a big hug when he seen me, and that was fun, man. But being there, I get to Fort Lewis, and I was there for 2 months, and then we come back to camp, and my teammates voted me a captain, and it was real humbling for me, real proud moment in my career, because you know I came to Fort Lewis, and everybody knew I was the Division I guy from Michigan State, and I was coming in with all the hype, mm-hmm. and I never wanted any of that, man. I just wanted my pads and wanted to prove myself. And I remember first day of practice, and you know, I just was like, you know, I'm going out here. You know, I'm a Fort Lewis Skyhawk. I'm playing football. This is what I asked for. This is what I wanted to do. And that's exactly what I did. Went out there 100 miles per hour and had a ball. So I played my first season, and I hurt my knee. I tore my meniscus, like, after game six. So I was out for the rest of that year. That was another trying time for me. And finished up this last year at Fort Lewis, second-year captain, and played well, man. I'm real proud of how I ended my college career, especially in Durango, Colorado. Made a lot of new memories, and very proud of taking that team from 0-10 to having a winning season these last couple of years.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I even saw, Arthur, that you were named as all-conference second team as well in that final season. Now, moving on now, I want to talk about the grind of making it to the NFL. What took place at rookie minicamp with the Miami Dolphins this past summer, Arthur?
Oh, the Dolphins, being down there with the Dolphins was amazing. That was a dream come true. You know, it was short-lived to me because I was like, okay, this is my dream job I always wanted. So, you know, that first day of practice, you know, I was getting a lot of reps in as center and guard. You know, I just wanted to prove myself, man. You know, I know a lot of people, even after having two successful seasons at Fort Lewis, a lot of people question my health and question my ability to play at a high level. So I just wanted to go down there and show my skills, man. And I definitely feel like I did that. You know, I got a lot of great feedback from the coaches, you know, even Coach Philbin before they let him go. And, you know, it was fun to be down there. Real fun.
So what are your ambitions now within the realms of professional football? Do you plan on continuing to try and make that dream happen?
I'm a little up in the air with it right now. You know, I'm
really?
I'm not quite sure yet.
And why is that?
Just because, you know, I'm 26 now. You know, life hits. You know, I'm ready to take the next step. Ready to sort of attack the next journey. I'm at the point where I feel like, well, you know, during this entire journey, you know, I never really have felt like I had to prove anything to anyone except myself. And I feel like for me to get back to this point and be, and I'm stronger than I was before everything happened, which is outrageous to me in my mind, you know, even physically. And, you know, I'm more mature now, but I'm sort of looking at the next step a little bit. You know, got my eyes on an athletics career, more of a more of a behind the scenes. Maybe I'm the guy in the suit shaking hands, or you know, maybe I'm the athletic director of a nice college. You know, it'd be I'm sort of figuring those things out right now.
Well, I tell you what, I follow you via social media, author, and you always get your hands on something, my man. I know you've been doing some motivational speaking. I looked at your profile, and it says you are an offensive line coach for a Coach Up. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
What is that? What is Coach Up?
Okay, Coach Up is it's a private coaching platform, and they pretty much sign up through them, and they cover you. As far as insurance wise, it's a real good tool, and they allow you to they basically create a coaching profile for you, and allow you to shop your private coaching business. Yeah, I'm a private O-line coach in the Chicago area, and it's going well, man. I just signed a deal with a facility that I got full use with, and everything's been going good with it. I'm just getting clients. I got a big load of guys coming for Christmas break. And I'm excited. I'm more excited to work with them than I think they are. You know, it's funny how things sort of change mentally. You know, I never after going to high school and college, I was like, yeah, I'll never be a coach. You know, I'm fine. You know,
right.
It's just all the time and everything that it takes to be a college coach. I was like, yeah, nah, I think I want a life, but doing it on a private level and being able to be more intimate with the kids and meet a wide variety of kids and share the things that I've learned and share everything that's allowed me to be successful. I feel like that's what I'm sort of supposed to be doing. You know, football has taken me a lot of places. You know, football has been good to me, and I've worked very hard for the game to be good to me. But now I feel like, you know, maybe I should share some of this now, especially in my city, in my hometown, Chicago, and I'm still on the South Side, and you know, I'm very much this is where I come from, this is where I am, who I am, and yeah, I definitely enjoy doing it. That's why I decided to do the private coaching thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, Arthur, this is certainly not the last time you will be a part of our airwaves. I'm still trying to get you on Current Sports TV, my man. And really briefly, right, before we hit our first break, I want to get your thoughts on what the Michigan State football program has been able to do this year. Of course, booking a ticket to the college football playoff where they will take on Alabama on New Year's Eve. Brief thoughts, Arthur.
Oh, I'm loving it. You know, Chicago is the biggest Michigan State hub. So, you know, all the Spartan alums, we all loving what Coach D and the boys are doing right now. You know, I know they're gonna take care of business down there at New Year's Eve. But you know, just proud, man. All the blood, sweat, and tears that went into my time just trying to get on the field and just trying to help grow the program, because that was Coach D's vision. Coach D's vision is coming to fruition. That's why I tell people, that's why I preach visualization and affirmations and just believing in yourself and how the mind is so strong. You know, Coach D, you know, in his first year, I was in his first recruiting class, and that's what he told us. He said, you know, you come here, we're going to turn the program around, and we're going to become champions, we're going to become winners. And I'm just proud that I was able to be a part of that. You know, I wish the boys best of luck. I know they're going to get it done for us.
Well, I tell you what, Arthur, you are certainly a product of that very vision. There you have it, the one, the only, Arthur Ray, former Michigan State football lineman. Arthur, we'll meet again, my friend, and thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Yes, sir. Thank you, my man. Be cool.
You know it. You know it, man. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be chatting with Michael Buffer, longtime boxing and wrestling ring announcer. You do not want to miss that chat and so much more. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. We'll be right back.
Tonight, we are going to witness the most anticipated match in the history of professional wrestling for the heavyweight championship of the world. Are you ready? For the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, from the capital city of the United States of America, Washington, D.C., ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Ladies and gents, his name is synonymous with the sport of boxing and professional wrestling. Born and raised in Philly, Michael Buffer began his ring announcing career in 1982, and by 1984, he developed the catchphrase, "Let's get ready to rumble." Gotta love that, right? Which gained enormous popularity. His one-of-a-kind work has led him to announce events like the World Series, Stanley Cup Finals, NBA Finals, and even NFL playoff games. So many athletes have admired his work as well. For example, the great Sugar Ray Leonard once said, quote, "When Buffer introduces a fighter, it makes him want to fight." It's my pleasure to welcome to Current Sports, Michael Buffer. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I am doing fantastic. It is certainly a pleasure to have you on the show. Now, Mike, to start our conversation, I want to first talk about, you know, the very, you know, first stages of where you, you know, what got you to where you are right now. And I want to first talk about your childhood. Doing some research here, I know that at 11 months, your parents were, I believe, divorced, and you were raised by foster parents. What was your childhood like, Mike?
Oh, I had a great childhood. I was really lucky to end up with the best family ever, and I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia with, I always refer to them as mom and dad, and it was a leave it to Beaver childhood in the 50s and early 60s.
And also, of course, at age 20, you enlisted in the Army during the Vietnam War,
right,
and served until you were 23. What made you enlist in the Army, Mike?
In 65, the Vietnam really began to escalate, and they were drafting everything that moved, and including draftees were being sent into the Army, Navy, Marines, etc. And I knew I didn't want to be on anything on water, and the Marines basically are just predominantly, you know, infantry and combat forces. And the Army had, if you enlist, you give an extra year instead of the 2-year draft. You go in for 3, and you get to choose a vocation, or an MOS, as they say in the military. And I ended up being a photographer in the Army.
Wow. What was that experience like for you?
That was great. I really enjoyed my 3 years, but that's only because I would, you know, a lot of things in life are luck. And in 3 years in the Army during the 65 to 68, with everything that was happening in Southeast Asia, I never got west of Fort Knox, Kentucky. So it's just a matter of luck, because I had plenty of buddies that, you know, went there and survived, and quite a few that didn't. So, I consider myself blessed.
Without a doubt. Now, Mike, so in many ways, you go from being behind the camera as a photographer during that time to in front of it and embarking on a modeling career. How did that come about, my man?
Well, I got out of the Army, and I was a car salesman for quite a few years, and married, divorced, had a couple of young sons, and when being single again, I was dating a girl that was a model, and she gave me the name of her agent, and I just, one thing led to another, and I found myself doing runway and print work, and I said, "Wow, they pay you to do this." So it was that worked out pretty well. It's a great way to make a living, and but I was a sports fan, and with all the boxing that was going on, I lived in Philadelphia. You know, I used to work in New York and Philadelphia, and all the things that were going on in Atlantic City with the booming casino business at that time, They had boxing 3, 4, and sometimes 5 nights a week. And I got my foot in the door, and it just took off.
Now, I got to know, Mike, of course, I mean, your voice. I mean, anytime I tune in, because I'm still a big, you know, boxing aficionado to this day. Anytime I see that you are doing a fight, hearing you announce a fighter, it just sort of puts it in perspective. Kind of like that Sugar Ray Leonard quote. It just makes you want to fight. You know that it's game time. For you, I got to know, though, what was your first experience like when you first walked into the ring with the cue cards and are reading off and introducing fighters? I mean, what were your nerves like, and why did you want to embark on this career? How did you get started?
Yeah, I was dreadful. I was nervous as hell.
Really?
My hands were shaking, and I didn't even know how to read a scorecard, and somehow I managed to get through the night. And I didn't get any more job offers for a while, and I sort of I managed to. I recorded that night. It was on USA, the Tuesday night fights on USA. And I looked at it and I said, "Well, I know what I have to do to be better." And I got another break somewhere, and you know, just tried to be better, which I still do to this day. I always try to be better.
Well, what mistakes did you make in that first fight that you look back on?
What did I do? What did I do that was wrong?
Yeah.
Everything. It was just it was lousy. It was a bad night.
Okay. Well, moving on, of course, you have become a staple in the fighting world. And of course, many people out there, I mean, I mean, when we first announced that you would be coming on the show, of course, the question that everyone wants to know is, how in the world the catchphrase, "Let's get ready to rumble," how did that start? How did one night you go out there and say, "You know what, let me try this," and what made it stick?
Yeah, you know, I found out that the ring announcers at that time, this is like back in 82, 83, were all introducing the entire boxing commission. And what that, you know, that plus if you had a WBC, WBA, IBF component to the introductions, then you had to introduce the president of that organization and their supervisor. So now you're introducing 4 doctors, 3 judges, a referee, 4 commissioners, a chairman, an executive director. And you killed the crowd, because at that point where I'm introducing all those people, it's right after the fighters made these entrances to the ring with music and excitement. It was electric, and it's the main event. And then ding, ding, and you're reading off all these names that nobody knows, nobody cares about. It was basically ego gratification for, you know, the powers that be. And I wanted something to get a little more energy back into the room and let the fighters know that they're the stars of the show. They deserve, you know, people to be on their feet or, you know, really into the introductions. You know, the thing in auto racing, at the Indy 500, 450,000 people go crazy when some little old lady says, "Gentlemen, start your engines," because that means the action is about to begin. And I wanted to come up with a hook like that. And I tried "Man Your Battle Stations" and "Ladies and gentlemen, fasten your seatbelts." And it was just crickets. There was nothing happening out there. And, you know, the great Muhammad Ali used to say that he was, "I'm ready to rumble. I'm so pretty. Rumble, young man, rumble." And I liked the sound of that and fine-tuned it to what you hear today with "Let's Get Ready to Rumble."
Wow. How cool is that? Now, I understand that since then, of course, you know, years have passed over time. Now, you have trademarked that phrase. Am I right, Mike?
It's a registered trademark, yeah.
It is a registered trademark. And I'm curious to know, through the years, since you've trademarked that phrase, has there been any legal issues that you have and your people and your team have encountered that you had to take a few guys to court for using it? Has that ever happened before?
Yeah, more than quite a few. It pops up, and you know, many times, you know, you'll have a car dealer in Davenport, Iowa, or something that might be using it in a radio commercial, and it's not like the world is going to come to an end. And we have to issue a cease and desist and, you know, explain why, and they understand. But there have been other times where it's come up and it's damaging to the trademark, whether it's a syndicated radio show that had political views that, you know, may not be too popular with everyone, that can kind of, like, people say, well, Michael Buffer's saying that. And then we've had to go to court with some major syndicators and movie studios and a few things in the past, but it's always worked out, and we're batting 1,000 because it is it's intellectual property, and it's you know, what exactly what it says, a TM, a registered trademark.
What convinced you to slap a trademark on that phrase, Mike?
It started, you know, it was something that I, you know, created and made popular, and then it was being, you know, picked up. It's no different than writing a song or a play or a script, and you, it's intellectual property, something you've made popular, so you want to make sure you own it. It's your property.
Very cool stuff. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are talking with Fame Ring announcer Michael Buffer. All right, Mike, I got to bring this up because I am one of the biggest Rocky fans you'll ever meet. I love the franchise, and I actually went to the movie theater not too long ago, and I checked out the Rocky spinoff entitled Creed. Of course, Sly, Sylvester Stallone, he plays the trainer of Apollo Creed. Of course, Sly is playing Rocky. He plays the trainer of Apollo Creed's son, Adonis Creed, who is played by Michael B. Jordan. And watching the film, of course, there were a lot of media types in the film. Hannah Storm, Michael Wilbon, a few others, Max Kellerman. And also, you know, of course, when during that final fight scene, you are doing the ring announcer. I have to ask you, what was the production of Creed like? And what was your takeaway from the film? How much did you enjoy seeing yourself on the big screen?
First of all, it's I think that's my third Rocky film.
Right.
And what made this particular movie really exceptional was that Rocky is not a fighter now. He's, you know, he's a guy that's in his 60s, the ex-heavyweight champion, and owns a restaurant in Philly, as we saw previously in Rocky Balboa, and Sylvester turns in a great performance. He's nominated for a Golden Globe. And the buzz is that he's probably going to get nominated for an Academy Award. A great performance. But the director, Ryan Coogler, mm-hmm. who did Fruitvale Station, I'm sure you saw that flick. A great independent movie, critically acclaimed. This is one of the really hot writers and directors in Hollywood. And Michael B. Jordan, another excellent actor that's going to just be a superstar. Getting to meet these guys for the first time and work with them was really a treat. And, you know, we filmed almost everything in Philadelphia. We used the big green screens that, you know, see high-tech film work today. You can have battleships and Vikings invading Hastings and everything else. So it's just amazing. And, you know, they made it into an outdoor stadium in Liverpool, England, when he fought Pretty Ricky, who, by the way, who was played by a real fighter, Tony Bellew. I just got back from London, and Tony won the European Cruiserweight Championship.
Oh, boy, I had no idea. Wow, yeah. Pretty Ricky. Nice.
Yeah, so it's a pretty exciting movie with a great climax, and actually, I haven't seen it yet. I couldn't go to the premiere because I was hosting a charity event in Las Vegas the same night. So,
oh boy, you haven't even seen it.
Everybody's raving about the movie.
It's really unbelievable, Mike, and it gave me the feeling when I left that theater. It gave me the same feeling of when I had when the credits started to roll on the very first Rocky. It's really remarkably done. And looking at Michael B. Jordan, now I saw him in Fruitvale Station. He you know, he's not a small guy in general, but it seemed like he really packed on the pounds. You know, when it comes to his muscle. For this film, I mean, how astonished were you at his shape for this film?
He got into great shape. He did a lot of hardcore training. He's an athlete to begin with, and so he just he didn't like bulk up like a bodybuilder, but he just got mean and hard, like a really well-trained athlete and fighter. And his appearance in the flick is quite astonishing. He really captivates the audience.
Yeah, he definitely does. All right, Mike, before we get you out of here, I have to bring up this this question to you, just concerning the state of boxing today. Of course, it's no secret that boxing over the years, from a popularity standpoint, has taken a bit of a hit. Floyd Mayweather, he announced his retirement. He's leaving the game. He was the sport's biggest money getter for quite some time. And a lot of people out there are wondering, what state, how healthy is boxing right now when it comes to looking at the future of it? What is your analysis of the state of boxing today, and where do you see the sport going?
Well, first of all, the sport has become bigger and larger on an international scale. As far as big paydays go, and that's we don't really see that in America that much. The driving division behind boxing has always been the heavyweight division, and because of Vladimir and Vitali Klitschko having the titles in that division for 10 years, and fighting in Germany in front of crowds of 50 and 60,000 people twice a year, you know, we're not really seeing that. And we did just recently, it was on HBO, a dreadful heavyweight fight. I'm anxious to see the rematch, see if Vladimir can have a fire lit under him again. But
right.
The boxing, I work in Germany, Russia, just got back from London regularly. I'm like every 6 weeks or so, I find myself in Europe. Huge crowds, sellout crowds. It's alive and well. The UK, they're just great, great boxing fans. They sell out arenas all the time. And when we think of boxing as like taking a back seat these days, maybe to MMA or something, all you have to do is go on the internet, go to like boxrec.com and look up the schedule, and you'll see on a Friday and a Saturday, dozens of world-class boxing events all around the world. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to MMA, which is really dominated by the UFC, you're going to see one major event every 3 weeks with a few smaller ones thrown in here and there. So it's definitely alive and well and thriving and you've got some big stars that we're going to see on HBO and Showtime. Mostly on HBO, you've got Gennady Golovkin, you know, Triple G, the middleweight champ.
Love Triple
G. Canelo Alvarez has the WBC middleweight title, but he doesn't want to fight anybody over 155 pounds. But
right.
Ramon Gonzalez has a flyweight, maybe the pound-for-pound, the best fighter in the world, and just Terrence Bud Crawford from Omaha, Nebraska, is a junior welterweight champ. Pacquiao was fighting again. He's fighting Bradley in April. So boxing's alive and well. You're going to see some great, great fights on premium TV. And for me, it's great. I'm 71. I thought I'd be retired by now, but the phone keeps ringing.
Just like how it rang for us to get you here on the show, right, Mike?
Yeah, it's like from The Godfather. Just when I thought I was out, they bring me back in.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, Mike, we unfortunately are out of time. But, man, oh, man, was this a fantastic chat or what? Again, Michael Buffer, famed ring announcer. Mike, would you mind giving us a little Let's Get Ready to Rumble before we get you off the line?
Well,
No. Yes, no.
I can't, you know, for business purposes, I can't use the full trademark.
Oh, man.
But I understand you're in Spartan country there, right?
We are, yes.
Yeah. Well, how about this? Let's get ready for Sparty!
Now, that was hot. We are certainly going to use that time and time again. Mike, thanks so much for your time. It was a pleasure.
All right, take care.
You do the same.
Bye-bye.
That was even better than Let's Get Ready to Rumble, right, Isaac?
Oh, yeah, that's customizable for the show.
Gotta love that. Michael Buffer, man, I can only imagine what his schedule is like, though, because we all know, I mean, boxing, certainly over the years, has taken a hit here in America. I mean, I can't even name you know, really, other than Floyd Mayweather, a really big-time superstar American boxer that's really taken over the reins of the sport. I mean, most people, you know, are most of the boxers now are internationally driven. I watched the with the Alvarez and Miguel Cotto fight. They're both international fighters as well. I just really think that in order for the sport to be healthy here in America, Isaac, you gotta have that American superstar that no one can deny is the best. I just truly believe that.
And that's what we see with tons of worldwide sports. And actually, to use a transition too, we see it in soccer as well, where the American women's team, who Abby Wambach is playing her last game tonight, actually in New Orleans.
Yep.
But you need that superstar. You need the faces to really capture the presence and the excitement of a nation. And like you said, unfortunately for boxing, with Floyd Mayweather's retirement, we don't know who's going to step up and take that crown or take that belt and really carry the American boxing dream forward.
Yeah, that is so true. All right. Well, man, was this a hot show or what? We had Arthur Rader to begin our show and then, of course, transition to Michael Buffer. I'm still, this is like my third cup of coffee here. I woke up very, very early to make the trip to Spartan Stadium for Michigan State football Cotton Bowl Media Day that was held at Spartan Stadium in the Media Center. I got a chance to talk with a lot of players. Again, as we approach that December 29th dance between the Spartans and Alabama Crimson Tide, of course, on New Year's Eve, everyone looking forward to that game. And it was interesting because I tell you what, it was so early in the morning, Isaac. And when my alarm went off around, what, like 6:40 to hop and take a shower, get dressed, and get down to Spartan Stadium because the interviews began at 7:30. But a few of the players, I think, overslept a bit because, we were waiting on Shalit Calhoun. It was a funny moment. And we're going to bring a lot of our coverage from that media day from this morning to you tomorrow. But there was an interesting moment with Shalit Calhoun. He walks in, and everyone's waiting on Shalit, like the last offensive player to come in. And he sits down, and he gets to ask the question, I forget by who, on whether or not he sees Derrick Henry in his dreams when looking at, this matchup. Heisman Trophy winner, Derrick Henry, the hoopla surrounded around that young man is truly off the charts. And he says, no, but I've been having some good dreams. That's why I came in here a little bit late. How hilarious is that, though, right? But it was an early media day. I know Coach D'Antonio, he talked at 11:30. I stayed here to man the fort and get ready for today's radio show. But everyone's talking about this matchup. You just heard Michael Buffer mention it. It's going to be a fun one. But again, you want to keep it locked. Keep it locked tomorrow as we will bring you our coverage from Cotton Bowl Media Day for the football team. Tonight, Isaac, I'll be checking out my Detroit Pistons as they take on the Boston Celtics. And I'm still hurting from that loss, though, to the Clippers on Monday, a game which I really thought the Pistons should have won, but some bad coaching down the stretch. We'll see if they get back on the winning track.
Yeah, we'll see. I think Reggie Jackson might be primed for an excellent game tonight. I'm crazy about Isaiah Thomas on the other end.
Love him.
But he's undersized. And Reggie Jackson, we both know, he's basically a small forward in a point guard's body. He can do it all. Got him on my FanDuel account. Speaking of, Al, I can't get above 75th percentile in that. Man, those people are good.
Yeah, and a lot of it has to do with the disparity of how many people play as well. So, yeah, I feel you, though, on that one, brother. All right, well, much thanks to Arthur Ray and Michael Buffer for joining me on today's Current Sports, and thanks to all of you out there for listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people. Mm-hmm.